Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of East Meets West here on the Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retreat podcast and platform, one of the most consistent shows in ESSR in 2022. And how fitting is it, some of the last content you'll be hearing here in ESSR in 2022 is our dulcet tones telling to you about all the wackiness that closed out New Japan Pro Wrestling towards the end of the year. I am one of your usual hosts, Scott McLeod, and I am joined today by the Taka Michinoku to my Tai Chi. Couldn't think of an example. I just <laughs> right off that one, so I did. They did a show together recently. Fuck it. It's Grant McRobbie. Hello, Grant.
Hello there. And as Tai Chi said at the end of that card, a couple of bums to the end.
The unofficial tagline of East Meets West, I believe that is.
Those two bums that will consistently put out content without being asked. Stephen Wilson, 2022.
Or as everyone else describes this on ESSR, those two bums who talk about Japanese wrestling. But yes, it's the week of Christmas. We're just days away from the end from Christmas. Are you excited, Grant?
I am excited, but also very sad at the same time for some of the things that have happened recently in New Japan.
Well, you know, we're getting to one of the most wonderful days of the year, so we have to get all our frustration. We need an opportunity, a platform to vent, and you know, you can't go into Christmas angry. Just like they say, you can't go to bed angry, never go into Christmas Day angry. So we this is the platform to do such a thing. But first, we should remind you about the other platforms that you can find Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retreat at. And that's all the platforms you get your podcast, whether it be Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Podbean, anywhere. Please give us a like, rating, or review on your platform of choice. And make sure to follow us on our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and now TikTok at Suplex Retweet. And you can join the Facebook Q&A page, get involved in the conversation over there. And we've got a lot to talk about here, Grant, and stuff that feels like it happened forever ago, but, you know, some delays in getting it up on New Japan World, because we had historic crossover, or, if you wanted to do it accurately, historic X crossover, because, you know, having a big X is still cool in Japan. You know, it's like having the word boys with a Z at the end.
Proper edgelord material with that name with a big X. Cross. Who'd have thought? Gedo, you fucking edgelord, you.
I mean, he's called Gedo. He willingly calls himself Gedo.
Yeah, it's spelt G-E-D-O, not G-A-Y-D-O.
Hell of a show, I thought. You know, for somebody who doesn't really keep up with a lot of stardom, I still had a lot of fun. We got introduced to a lot of stardom names very quickly because we had a really fun pre-show where we had a stardom ramble with so many people being thrown at me. And, you know, Chris Charlton does his best, God bless him, to explain to you who everybody is. But some people remained in my brain, some didn't. And then we also had some New Japan representation on the pre-show as the LA Dojo guys, I think it's fair to say, absolutely squashed the New Japan boys.
Oh yeah, that was a one-sided absolute scalping, that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's good old JR would say they took them boys to the woodshed.
They took the woodshed and they absolutely wrecked them. And it was a good warm-up for since all the LA boys were in the two tag leagues.
I mean that alone should have told you that there was no chance the Japan Dojo guys were going to win this one. Also, especially that the guys on the Japan side are all still Young Lions, dressing the traditional Young Lion gear, very limited moveset, whereas all the guys on the LA side all had characters and everything. I mean, Kevin Knight developed his character more so in his attire as Junior Tag League went on, so he was the most Young Lion looking on the LA side, but like, it's basically like guys who have graduated from Young Lion just, you know, feeling like, ah, this is what it feels like to be proper superstar. Now we can be the ones beating the shit out of trainees rather than being the trainees who get beat up.
That's it. It's like, my, how the turntables.
And basically, you imagine Shabab basically saying, like, you better go out there, you better not get battered by the boys, you better be the ones staying the bat. Otherwise, I'll be having words. There'll be a fresh scalping waiting for all of you boys.
The boy, like, yes, Mr. Shibata, sir. Please don't batter us. Go back to the orange man with the glasses.
Still can't believe that. But something also very rare for New Japan. We got some really fun intergender matches. Getting to see some of the people from New Japan interacting with the characters from Stardom. The very first one was the team of Zack Sabre, Julia, taking on Judy and obviously Tom Lawler. Lawler and Sabre still continuing on their ever-going feud from the G1 about who's better, George Michael or Boy George.
George Michael. No questions.
And for Tom Lawler, so close to Christmas, to disrespect the name of George Michael, I mean, it's just unthinkable.
And Zach used the tickers.
He did.
Use the tickers.
But how do you... I enjoy seeing like a lot of the Stardom acts kind of mixing in with the New Japan guys. Who do you think had the better kind of chemistry? Because I don't know how much more than me you follow Stardom.
I would like to watch more Stardom. It's just trying to find the time for it. I definitely feel when it came to the mixed tags, I think Zack Sabre Julia was just a fantastic pairing. They just worked on all the levels. So. It was really nice. So it's a fantastic way to get people that haven't seen this stuff into it. But also the 8-person tag match as well, with like having Suzuki-gun on either side of it, was a fantastic one. A lot of people will be familiar with perhaps Tam Nakano and Starlight Kid, who put on a fucking fantastic show in that match.
Yeah. I think Starlight Kid was one I was most familiar with, because I believe she was involved in that tag match. I remember one of the Dome shows they did last year, where they had some special Stardom matches on the pre-show of those shows. But yeah, Watanabe and Starlight Kid, along with Desperado and Doki, taking on Kanemaru, Taishi, Tam Nakano, and Natsupe.
Natsupe,
there you go. I was going to say, there's a 70% chance I fucked that up. But it was just so fun, just how pure the team teaming with Taishi and Kanemaru seemed, despite the fact that one of the men that they're teaming with is nicknamed the Heel Master, and yet they've got this very wholesome female tag team, and then just it felt like, my God, this match could tear Suzuki-gun apart, because those boys were not holding back.
I love that when Suzuki-gun are at war with each other. There is nothing friendly about it. It's like, for the match, it's like, I will scalp the living fuck out of you. Mm-hmm. We will be friends after this, but for now, I shall kill you.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. I loved part of the reason this made probably reason this is one of my favorite matches. Just how much fun it seemed like Kevin and Chris Charlton were having on commentary, and they just seemed to be enjoying themselves the entire night. And I heard Kevin Kelly basically saying, like, if Stardom want to get to a bigger audience, they need some English commentary. He put himself and Chris Charlton forward to do the commentary as well for Stardom. And, you know, I guess like you, like finding the time for certain companies that I know I should probably check out, like Stardom, is a big factor which stops me from watching it, because I try to find the time. But if there was a way I could watch it with Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton doing the commentary for it, I'd make the time. I'd force myself some time on my schedule to watch that.
I think if they can find a way, especially when knowing that they're owned by the same company, I would love it if they were to just mix the two on demand. Even if they said, look, we're going to charge you like an extra £2-3 a month to get both promotions on the same on-demand service. Mm-hmm. Give me it now. I'll take it.
Hook it to my veins.
Hook it to my veins.
We also had a really fun 10-man tag on historic crossover of Bushi, Hiromu, Sanada, Shingo, and Naito taking on the Empire's Aussie Open, Akira, TJP, and Gideon Grey. And what I loved about this is that I watched this because of how long it took to upload, and I was trying to keep up with the two tag league tournaments. So on a day where there wasn't any tag league for me to watch, I watched this. And so by this point, I'd heard Kevin Kelly's opinion slowly but surely change on Gideon Grey. Like, you know what? As long as he stays out of the ring, he remains a ring announcer, then I'm happy with that. And then just watching this and just seeing it, hearing Kevin Kelly's opinion, he's just shitting all over Gideon Grey. Like, he stinks. This great sport. And it was when Empire went, like, they basically had to win 4-on-5.
I love that. It's like, because like, he's got nothing but respect for like Aussie Open, because technically Kevin Kelly is part of Schadenfreude, and it's still one of the greatest unlikely friendships ever struck up. And it's like, yeah, gonna support the rest of them. Fuck you, Gideon Grey.
It is funny though, trying to watch Gideon Grey wrestle though. I just look at him like a man who looks like a cross between Tony Harris from Alan Partridge and Matt Hancock.
Oh, that is a fucking image and a half that will never come out of my mind.
We don't know what else Matt Hancock was up to when he was meant to be following restrictions. Gideon Grey may be an arsehole at times, but he'd follow restrictions.
It's like seeing Gideon like come into New Japan and actually wrestle in the ring, and I was like, fuck, I forgot he actually wrestles, because he always just done like mouthpiece work in the UK for so long, especially like, for like Okan and stuff like that when he came over here on excursion.
Yeah.
All hail.
All hail, of course. More on him later. It's funny because he does seem like such a character that it's weird to see him actually wrestling. There are quite a few characters like that. But it's also funny to see all of LIG teaming up to just put the boots to him at one point in this. And all of that, as great as United Empire, as great as LIG can be in like a big match situation, but when they're all together, you can do some really excellent comedy. There's a point where Kyle Fletcher is caught in the Paradise Lock, and they break it up by Sanada tripping up Mark Davis and sending him face first into Kyle Fletcher's arse. And that's how he breaks out of the Paradise Lock.
Which is one of the most unique ways I've ever seen that hold get broken.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah. Like, how will we do this? Will we kick him? No. I have a great idea. Watch this, lads. Watch this.
I mean, Made Empire got the win in this match. Bushi was on the other side, so no prizes for guessing who took the pin in this one.
Poor Bushi. Still can't catch a break.
We had the Great Muta's final match as he took on the Great... As he, Okada, and Toriano took on Great Okan, all hail, Jeff Cobb, and Aaron Hanare. Like, of course, as much as we'd like to see it go one way, of course Muta won. Muta will not go out on his back for anyone. But I don't know if you have a fresher idea than me, but I honestly cannot remember Muta doing much of anything until the end of this match.
Yeah, he was there.
Yeah,
I remember that. But, you know, there was nothing great about him. It's just... Although, I'm really fucking annoyed that they go with the Great Muta's final New Japan match, and then they've done something else in the back of it, and it's just a sheer fucking technicality that they're recognising two different people who are actually the same fucking person.
I know, it's absolutely absurd. Although, it was great to see him and Okan actually get to mix it up at one point. I remember finding myself towards the end thinking, is he going to hit the final move? And I'm wondering, other than the mist, what's his actual finisher right now, because I know he can't do the moonsault anymore because his knees are fucked. So, like, what's his actual finish? Okan thought he had the answer. He's going to use the green mist back at him. But unfortunately, it hits poor Jeff Cobb in the face, and that's why we've not seen him since. But then everybody knows that the green mist may be deadly, the red mist is much deadlier. There's a whole colour chart going from the top being the deadliest down to the bottom. So green's somewhere in the middle, red's just above it. So the red mist Toucan, Rainmaker, and Rainmaker on Hinari, the good guys win. Yay. No, actually, wait, there you go. He did hit a finish move, technically. He hit a Shining Wizard, so his knees are too fucked for him in Salt, but he can hit a Shining Wizard, kind of.
I mean, he can actually use his knee as part of a move. Because that makes sense.
He's got one good knee, the other one hanging by a thread.
Just one sinew away from snapping off.
It's going to be a point, because he's got obviously those matches at the start of 2023, you know, the matches in Noah with Nakamura and the thing with Team Sting and Darby. This is going to be a moment you hear this pop say, like, what was that? I think that was one of Muta's knees.
And at that point, we knew it was game over.
Yes. At that point, if he wasn't retiring before, he was now. There's got to be some big fans of Great Muta out there who are probably annoyed of it, us not taking him seriously, but, you know, fuck him, right? And his old age, he's become a bit of a prick if he heard even basically politicking his match at Wrestle Kingdom 16, Night 3, a match that he didn't even win.
I know, that was the most fucking ridiculous. Most ridiculous thing. I'm like, what the fuck?
I know, he's politicking all this shit to make himself look, not look weak during the match, but like, you're losing. If you want to use any sway, try and pick yourself to win, otherwise shut the fuck up.
It's like, yeah. Just go out on your back like you're fucking meant to, old man.
I know. You know he's not going to lose that final match between Sting and Darby, but you'll let Darby get the pin in the match, and that'll be his contribution to the younger generation.
And I, for one, I'm not thanking him for it.
Anyway, on to another match. Speaking of matches where the result was never in doubt, but it was still a solid match, 23 and a half minutes it went as well. Shota Umino, the Roughneck, going up against Will Ospreay. And one hell of a match, the fourth defense for Will Ospreay. I think he actually might be coming up on a record at this point. I think like he's almost close to like John Moxley, who has the most. And so I think if he gets past Wrestle Kingdom, he'll tie Moxley, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't fully looked it up.
Yeah, I'll need to double check that. That's actually a good point, because like, I don't think the US title has ever made it really that much further in regards to defences.
Yeah, and I think... Sorry, I was kind of in my head there. So when he won it in 2020, he retained it over Juice, the very next state they won it. Suzuki, Kenta, Nagata, Anderson, and then lost it to Archer. So he has five. So yeah, if Ospreay gets past Wrestle Kingdom, he ties it with most defenses. And if he can get another one after that, then he will officially have the most defenses of the IWGP US title. And do it, and I know the pandemic was involved in that, but you're doing a fraction of the bloody time it took Moxley to do it.
And that's the thing. Like the only other person that's had close to that is, well, he's now tied with Omega for second on defences. But more on that later.
Yes, how very fitting that is. But what did you think of this match? I know there was a history going into it, and with the sudden stoppage at Royal Quest, you had Red Shoes shoot his dad being the referee. But I saw like call it a historic crossover. You didn't think there'd be much changes on the New Japan side, because I think the main event of the show has been built around this new women's title being crowned, so I don't think anybody could see. I don't think anyone foresaw Ospreay not going into Wrestle Kingdom as a champion. But how do you think this match played out for Shota? Kind of as a first, seemingly he's got this new character, so I'm assuming he'll be back more on a full time basis in New Japan. So he's first kind of out and is this Roughneck. What did you think of it?
Honestly, I thought he looked a star. I think it's New Japan doing what they quite often do with some of their bigger acts nowadays, where they come in, they have a big title match, they don't come out successful in the end of it, but it lets you know what the intention is. Because I mean, remember Jay White came in, went straight for the Intercontinental, fucked it royally, and now look at him. Now he is the top guy. So
absolutely,
I think Shooter just is. He looked $1 million, and I'm very, very excited to see what's going to be next for him in the near future, because I can only see the only way being up for here from here for him.
Yeah,
absolutely fantastic.
Not fully got rid of the connection to Moxley though when he was Shooter, because he did hit a Rough Rider once or twice for a really close near fall at one point during this, and Chris Yellen had a belter of a line on commentary, which made me think maybe give us an insight into what his future will be booking wise as we build him up, and that obviously he's lost several times in Red Pro to Ospreay, you know, challenge for the British heavyweight title, lost, had the match at World Quest, and he lost here. The idea of like maybe he will be to Ospreay like what Okada is to Ospreay, like that guy, he can't, that one guy he's struggling every time to be, but gets closer and closer every time. And Ospreay still, you beat Okada, but maybe one day he will, and maybe one day on a big stage, Shota will get that win over Ospreay.
That's, I think it's gonna lead there. It's gonna be that down the road sort of thing. Like he's gonna be put on a full journey to get there, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's. I'm gonna call an early prediction now. The Dome 2024. That's when Shooter will finally get his win over Ospreay.
Nice, I like it. I like it. There is a moment where they do tease like the elbows by Ospreay, and maybe Richards has to call off, and like Shooter like grabs his dad's leg, which I know is meant to be like, no, don't stop the match, but really from a certain angle you could say like, dad, please don't let him hurt me anymore.
Daddy, please make it stop.
Daddy, the Englishman's being mean to me.
Daddy, William's being a bastard.
Oh, that's just William. But I do love that there was a really close near fall. Ospreay did have given him a lot to beat him. He did look annoyed that he had to use that much, like the fucking front-facing hidden blade, which looks even worse than like taking it to the back of the head, but he kicks it. He gets the Stormbreaker in the end. It does seem to be like he keeps the Stormbreaker at bay for now, but it does seem like nowadays when he hits the Stormbreaker, it's a case of this is the only other thing that he'll do now. So it's kind of like Shingo and his give up like a less frequent version of like Shingo's Last of the Dragon. Like, okay, if nothing else works, this will have to do.
It's very good. The hidden blade, I still get uncomfortable every time I fucking see it, especially the front facing one. I'm like one wrong move. And that is another broken orbital. Like Sanada's wasn't from the hidden blade, that was from the fucking knee to the face on the standing fucking like star press or whatever. But you know, every time I see the hidden blade, I'm just like, no.
Yeah, okay. It's going to be very interesting when he first teases that hidden blade in his upcoming Wrestle Kingdom match, because as soon as the match is over, lights go out, who appears on the screen, speaking in Japanese as well? Kenny Omega. We all had theories, because they had Ospreay speaking out about Omega calling him an arsehole and saying that basically he was keeping him from appearing in AEW. And Ospreay was faced off with him in the Trios tournament. There's rumors that there was a backstage meeting where basically he was referencing Ospreay, but saying like, yeah, I wouldn't hire, Kenny Omega said to the AEW roster, I wouldn't hire like 80% of you, but supposedly was jokingly saying that towards Ospreay. So there's real life tension here. So Omega basically says like, oh yeah, well, Ospreay was meant to be my successor, but this place is much worse off without me, so I'm coming back to save this company, and I'm going to do it against Will Ospreay for the US title at Wrestle Kingdom. And in this past we've said some mean things about Will Ospreay because of the person he can be in real life, but you know, sometimes you can separate the real life person from the wrestler. As a wrestler, he puts on some banging performances, so believe me when I say this, that for this one time, Willie, please cave his fucking head in.
This is a dream match. I don't even remember if these two have actually faced in singles competition before, or I think it's possibly once, like a long, 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 long time ago. It is going to be fucking nuts. and it's actually in danger of overshadowing the fucking main event at Wrestle Kingdom. That's how big it is.
Oh, yeah. And it's weird that Omega's back in this position, because there's a big explosion of popularity for New Japan in America and like Western audiences, because Chris Jericho came to challenge Omega for the US title at Wrestle Kingdom in a double main event, which almost overshadowed the actual main event. And what's happening here now, Omega's, you know, he either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become Chris Jericho. And now he's back in that position. And much like that Wrestle Kingdom where he fought Jericho, this is being billed as a double main event. But you can obviously see why, because for the pure New Japan like wrestling fans and fans like AEW, he's like two of the biggest like names in Japan, for like Western names in Japan, kind of facing off. So I think if they have faced off, which I don't know, like you said, if they have in a singles match, he wouldn't have fought Ospreay like the version that is right now. He still probably would have been in the junior division back then. So like this is like proper main event Will Ospreay, you know, a guy who's been putting out, you know, as Seamus would say, banger after banger after banger, getting like, he's taking like a fucking 5-star matches like they're going out of fashion.
Like to the point that he's actually overtaken Okada for them, which I'm sure Stephen Wilson will be jizzing his frillies about.
You're like, I remember, actually I didn't watch this live, as I already mentioned, but because of the time difference, if something big happens in Japan, often when you wake up the next day, you can, if you go online, you can hear people talking about it. So one of the things being shared around by everyone that when I woke up that Sunday was just people mentioning Kenny Omega, that like, very few people were mentioning Kai, so I think it may have slightly overshadowed her, but this announcement was the big thing coming out of the show, like Kenny Omega's back, Kenny Omega versus Ospreay at the Dome.
That's just absolutely, like, I could not believe it. I was like, what? I never thought, because when Omega left about, they made it sound like things weren't quite on good terms.
Mm.
So I never thought we'd see Omega back, even though AEW and New Japan were working together at points. There was just something I was like, I still don't think we're going to get Omega at the Dome. Not again. I think that's done. And then they've done this, and I was like, oh, I was so fucking wrong, and I could not be happier.
Because they did the worst teaser, there would be some AEW involvement at the upcoming Tokyo Dome. And so I was wondering, like, well, who's it going to be? Is it going to be somebody who's got a light to New Japan, who's not doing anything in AEW, like a Lance Archer they're talking about? Or are you talking about somebody on the bigger scale? And basically, they got you the biggest AEW-related name that you could send to Japan, which is Kenny Omega. So that's a major name for the Dome. And I do think this is a match that a lot of people will tune in to and exclusively to see. And a lot of people are still hesitant about tuning back in Japan because of the difficult couple of years they've had because of the pandemic. So I do think, much like how the Jericho match with Omega did a great business for them, this is a match that New Japan needs right now to help drive the interest back.
Yeah, that's silly. If you want to bring people back, this is how you do it. You give them the dream match. It's been said by people like, you know, this match won't dip, but you need it in a noisy venue, and this should be proper. They may go, fuck the rules, we're going to make all the noise.
Yeah, I think they've announced that they're going to do like return to full time to noise, but it's not going to be until after Wrestle Kingdom, which is a shame, because I think the plan currently is like New Beginning in Osaka. To kind of know, like, it is a new beginning, we're back to old noise, but, you know, like you said, there's going to be a spot in that match where they're going to make a noise, like, a whole stadium is going to break, a whole Tokyo Dome is going to break the rules just for one moment.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine that there is going to be, like, I've read kind of, like, the ins and outs of it, and it seems to be, like, there's going to be, like, a very small socially distanced section which allows kind of more extended noise, and the rest of it's going to be, like, restricted to, oh yeah, you can do like a count along with the ref and that. You can do like little 10 to 20 second things. It's like, these people are going to absolutely rip the arse out of it, I can tell it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, these people are going to take advantage of it, and rightfully so. But we're going to have a lot to talk about with that match in a later episode when we look ahead at the Wrestle Kingdom card. But let's go to the main event and give that its due of historic crossover, the crowning of the first ever IWGP Women's Championship. Because like most of this took place in Japan, where I didn't see it, because I knew there was an international bracket, but I thought there'd be more, it'd be more accessible. But no, I saw one match at Royal Quest, and all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, Mayu Iwatani versus Kairi at the Dome, that's the final. Like, really? Like, if I didn't watch that one Royal Quest match, I would have thought this tournament was fictitious, like the one that Pat Patterson allegedly won to become bloody Intercontinental Champion. But yeah, and the commentary did a really good job with like explaining the history between these two, like Kari leaving, you know, with Tanaka staying, helping to be one of the big figureheads of Stardom. And, you know, if anybody out there wanted to figure out why people like Meltzer for years have been, you know, really championing Japanese women's wrestling, I think a match like this is a match to watch to see just why, because this was 25 and a half minutes of just sheer, just, it doesn't matter that they're both women, they just went out there and just battered each other.
This, to me, was a match that shows why both these women are regarded as among the best, not just women's wrestlers, but wrestlers in general. Iwatani is one of my fucking favourites when it comes to women's wrestling, and I always loved Kairi. I felt we never got quite the full package of Kairi in the WWE. Like, this is what she can really do. And it was 25 and a half minutes of just fucking absolute stunning wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
It was proper dramatic. You got really fucking invested in it. There was near falls, there was some brutal moves getting thrown out, and you're like, yeah, this is nuts. Like, they're outperforming a ton of what the guys could do.
Mm. Yeah, and there was some like scary near falls, like Kairi had to kick out of, like, she left it so last minute to get that shoulder out and did it like to show that she was so exhausted. That there was also a moment where, like, you wondered, did the ref fuck up? It was so close. And you get, like, she was getting multiple like suplexes onto her head. It's like she took a tombstone at one point. It made me start to worry for her, because, like, I believe there was like rumors of her having some really bad injuries when she left WWE. But I still maintain she over exaggerated how badly she was hurt just to get out of WWE, in a case of like, please don't put me in the ring with Nia Jax again, please.
I mean, let's face it, if someone said to you, you're going in the ring with Nia Jax, how bad would you fake an injury? I would fake that I was on my deathbed.
Yes. I'd be like, Winston, oh, my knee. Because, like, they just kept putting her in the ring with Nia Jax so many times in a short space of time. Just like, and every time something went wrong, like, lads, like, doing the same thing multiple times expecting something different to happen is the definition of insanity. Please, for this poor woman's sake, stop putting her in the ring with Nia Jax.
It's like, please, no, not Nia Jax. It's like, I would even go as far as doing the old Jack and Victor in the post office. Like, oh, my heart. Oh, no. I can see the light.
But there was some insane spots, as you mentioned, this match. Like, yeah, Kairi diving outside. They had a little brawl up on the ramp and everything. But Kairi, in the end, was the victor with the insane elbow. Really rightly deserved. You could see, I think she injured her arm at one point. She was struggling to hold it up at one point, and during the celebration she was crying. The belt looks amazing, like really much a throwback to the old IWGP kind of belts. But she didn't get much time, because she had a rather unique post-match exchange with Tam Nakano.
I know, that was a bit odd.
Yeah. Like, even with Chris Charlton kind of translating it on the English commentary, I'm still like, what's happening here?
It's like, what? This is the first women's champion. Can we just enjoy the celebration? What is this? What is this that is going on? I do not understand.
So it's been made official, because they already announced that whoever won it, their first defense of the title would be at Wrestle Kingdom, because Stardom does have final say over where the title is defended and who it's defended against. And so, even though it's going to be under the IWGP banner, so it will be defended at New Japan shows. It says it's going to be a presence on New Japan Strong, which I'm looking forward to, and also at Stardom shows as well. So I don't think we'll see it in New Japan, in Japan, unless it's a major event like your Wrestle Kingdoms, your Dominions. But we've got the first match announced, but supposedly someone else is showing up at Wrestle Kingdom to potentially be a challenger to Kairi, aren't they?
Yes, I've heard a bit more on the back of this, and apparently the rumours are that it's going to happen, but the match itself won't be till April.
I think that's a good idea. Like, hold off on that match as much as possible, because as much as you want to build the anticipation by having her show up at WrestleMania, we're talking about Sasha Banks, by the way, or Mercedes
it's
Moné.
It's boss time!
Or Mercedes Moné, she's allegedly trademarked the name for. I don't know what it's boss time is in Japanese, but it's that, whatever that is. And so, but like, of course, the you want to show up or show up at Wrestle Kingdom to cause as much buzz as possible, get everyone talking about it, but do hold off on the match, because if you're paying her the money that's allegedly they are paying her per appearance and it's going to be a multi-appearance deal, you want to have her hold the belt at some point, but you also don't want to kind of immediately sweep Kairi to the side as the first ever women's champion.
I need anyone to be proper Andy. I don't want to play with you anymore. As he drops Woody.
Just somebody pops up in the back with Kairi's pirate. Hi, I'm Kairi. Howdy, howdy, howdy.
What are you doing up here, Kairi? What are you doing up here, Kairi? I broke my squeaker.
Anyway, but again, they mentioned the idea of like the presence in the US, like New Japan Strong. So putting it on somebody who's recognizable in the US is a Sasha Banks. I'm not saying that people in the US don't remember Kairi, but I think someone like Sasha or Mercedes, whatever, call it whatever you want, might be a solid name to make draw quite a few people for like a big US show with that title being defended. There's even rumors that she'll have a big impact in Japan because allegedly she might appear at Wrestle Kingdom, but also there are people rumoring that, oh yeah, January 11th, she's going to be Saraya's big tag team partner for that tag match against Jamie Hayter and Britt Baker. Because you know Tony Khan, she's just too shiny of a new toy for him not to try and get in.
That's it. Tony Khan's got to have more in his collection of toys and that. It's like, for fuck's sake, Tony, play with what you've got. Play with what you've got.
It's like a spoiled kid at Christmas who gives a list of all those things they want. Like, you barely play with the toys you've got.
It took him fucking long enough to start playing properly with the House of Black, and he better not fuck that up either, I swear to God. But that's a different rant altogether.
I saw a theory there that they might, Tony Khan might wait till she's won the IWGP Women's title so he can then bring her in. He doesn't have to sign her, but he can bring her in as a Forbidden Door, you know, appearance, just to justify bringing her in and not having to sign her and further overbloat his roster.
Oh, Tony, you clever shitebag. What a way to get it at a budget price, eh? You absolute weirdo.
The greatest weapon in a promoter's arsenal, the loophole. So it was all that excitement around historic crossover and going into Wrestle Kingdom, but first we had to get through Super Junior Tag League and World Tag League. And I think you and I were on a similar wavelength in that I think we both enjoyed Super Junior Tag League a little bit more than World Tag League.
Yes, Super Junior Tag League was definitely the better one this year for me. World Tag League could have been better if they were allowed to have the champions there for it, but they didn't. Fuck you, Tony.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing because, like, again, I've ranted before on here and on Central about how it seemed like they were building to like a thing for Ring of Honor with the Ass Boys and FTR, and like you sacrifice 10 potential match of the year candidates. Yes, I even include House of Torture in there, because if anyone could drag those two to a decent match, it's FTR. You have instead to do a few with the Ass Boys, but no, the Ass Boys, like fucking idiots, decide there's three belts we could take for them, but we don't want to carry three belts. So, by the way, we're booking you in a third match with the Briscoes in a double dog collar match at Final Battle, which I've heard is very bloody and very good. I've not had a chance to watch it yet, but basically Tony Khan, for his first three pay-per-views as the owner of Ring of Honor, has booked the same match for his tag team titles. And this one, he booked the week off, so clearly he forgot about the tag titles and thought, fuck it, let's do Briscoes again. You've done it again. Okay, then let's have the Briscoes win this time. And so they let another tag team take their spot. The Briscoes win, so now they're 13 time Ring of Honor tag champs. And now Dax apparently hurt his arse bone in that match legitimately. And then they've got a match for next week on Dynamite with the Ass Boys with none of their titles on the line. So what titles exactly are the Ass Boys after at this point? Because I have a feeling FTR are probably going to lose the titles at Wrestle Kingdom, the IWGP ones that is. So,
and so they've also got the AAA titles getting defended between Christmas and New Year as well.
So if they end up losing those, the Ass Boys have got nothing to fight for. Like a couple of fucking idiots.
I know. Like, what is the Ass Boys angle here? What is the angle? And by the way, yes, the double dog collar match is fucking outstanding. It is a masterpiece of tag team wrestling and is absolutely brutal watching. I now can understand why someone can have a bruise like that on their ass cheek.
But yeah. Was this, I remember just thinking, like, because like the only belt left, providing they don't lose at AAA, but they might have to because they've held those AAA belts since, I believe, September or October of 2021. They've held those AAA belts, but they've kind of fallen in the background to their other belts. So, it's like, was this all a roundabout way just to get the AAA titles? Because, if anything, you could have just challenged them to a fucking match. No one really cares in America, it seems like, when they're booking FTR about the AAA belts. Because I remember mistakenly thinking it said IWGP AAA tag title match, when really I was just reading it saying above FTR's name that they were the IWGP and AAA tag champions. So we're thinking, like, please don't make us think that they would lose the IWGP belts to the Ass Boys. That's not a universe I want to live in.
It's just, get me off this planet.
Yeah, but still, I still don't think the dog collar match was worth putting then. Not being a World Tag League, they definitely needed them in World Tag League. But I think what helped Super Junior Tag League is the idea of like the freshness of this tournament, because this is the first time since 2019 that they've been able to do it like properly. And they had a lot of solid names in this. And we're going to talk about the finalists for both tournaments and the finals and go into everybody else. But the two finalists ended up being Leo Rush and Yo and Ace of Bay, as I call them. Sorry. Chris Bay and Ace Austin. And honestly, like, it could have went either way, and I really wanted Ace of Bay to win this tournament, but I'm not disappointed that it ended up going to Leo and Yo.
Yeah, I think this is the one where we both kind of wanted different winners, but either way, we were winners regardless, because the finals match between these two teams was brilliant. Yo has came in leaps and bounds with Leo Rush as a partner. He actually looked interesting for the first time in fucking years. But yeah, those finalists, Ace Austin and Crispy, it's hard to look past them. They're a fucking brilliant team. It is an absolute, they're a standout part of Bullet Club, and it's like one of those things you actually forget that they're in Bullet Club.
Yeah. Even though they kind of came out to an alternate version of Bullet Club's theme song, but then whenever they won a match, whoever got the pin, it's their theme song that played. So they had different outro songs that they did when they came out, which is funny. But then like, they were just like one of the more fluid teams in the tournament. Like, it took them five matches before they lost one, and the first match they lost was to bloody Leo and Yo. And it was like so close to spell in that match. They got a win over Buddy Titan and Bushi to start off the tournament, which was a big statement. You knew these guys were going to go far. I do love they were so cocky of them and so sure of themselves that when they finally got their first loss to Yo and Leo, you had Chris Bay kind of almost having a crisis of confidence, like, we were undefeated. We were undefeated. And Ace Austin's having to like help stop him from having a breakdown.
You could just see like the gears turning. It's like no, 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 no.
What was interesting is like they got off the hot start, but like it's a kind of contrast between the two teams where it seemed like it took a couple of matches for Leo and Joe to kind of find their footing, because like they lose to Catch 2-2 on the first night, and like their tandem like rolling like move they seem to do in the corner. It looked like in that match we catched the two, they tried it for the very first time, and they very much fucked it up. So much so the commentators keep commenting on how much they've improved it every time they've done it since.
It was a total botch the first time. It was like, oh yeah, that wasn't meant to happen, was it? That's going on Botchamania.
Oh, you boys, you tried, pat on the head, you tried your best.
I mean, most teams would be like, nah, fuck it, didn't work the first time, we're not doing it again. They're like, no, we'll do this, we will make it stick.
You did watch them that first time, like, you really could have had a few more attempts before you tried it in front of a crowd, kind of practiced it just a little bit more.
So the whole time I looked at it, I was like, this looks so fucking awkward, how is this going to work? And then it got better and better. I was like, now it makes sense.
I think both teams came out on 14 points in the end, with only two losses each. Leo and Yo lost to the champions. I can't remember the other team they lost to, but Crispy and Ace lost to Leo and Yo, and randomly El Lindemann and Alex Zane for some reason. I can only assume there was that connection still between Zane and Austin, but it seemed weird. And I did like the fact that there were four teams going into this tournament that it could have went through the final, and it came down to those four. Catch 2-2 versus Ace and Bay on one match on the final night of junior block action, and Leo Rush and Yo versus Bushi and Titan, because even though they lost, part of me still thought Titan and Bushi were going to go to the final.
No, I now see why we actually kind of blocked the other Rush and Yo loss out of memory, and it's because it was an 18-second match with the House of Bobags.
I forgot about that.
Because it was 18 seconds.
I know, and not the fun 18 seconds like the Daniel Bryan and Sheamus match, but like, yeah, basically the bell rang, hooked him up for a pile driver, 1-2-3, and just the apathy and Kevin Kelly's voice. It's just a new level, like it's like it was a new level of your parents saying they're not angry, they're just disappointed. Because like, that seemed like how.
Well, you see, it wasn't the good 18 seconds like Daniel Bryan and Sheamus. No, it was the bad 18 seconds, like the 18 seconds it took for Hockney to get the scores all fucking wrong at the weekend on Saturday Draft Live.
Yeah, I washed my hands of that. People just giving him a go at him and the chat. I was like, I'm just backing out here because I got accused of getting it wrong when I didn't make a mistake when I had to fill in for AEW 1 week. And so since then, I've just avoided doing the scores ever again.
It's like, nope, I am not doing this. But thankfully, your brother doesn't have a life. He keeps us right by giving us the full fucking recap.
He lives in the middle of nowhere and has a weird sleeping pattern, so he's able to stay up late and watch. Plus, he's winning for the first time in quite a few seasons, so he's got an investment.
Clearly, too much time in his hands and not enough wanking.
Well, you gotta find something to do between the wanking. You can't just wank non-stop.
I don't know. Have you checked in with Jack Graham?
Jesus. Anymore, his arm's going to fall off. He's going to be like the Winter Soldier.
It's going to be like fucking Quagmire coming out if he's discovered the internet.
this is that little dark corner of USSR that few people dare to go to. That's what East Meets West is. And by most people, I mean most of the panel, because we could get away with saying whatever the fuck we like on this show.
I know, I think the only person that ever properly listens to this in the panel is the GOAT.
Mainly just see if this is one of the few shows that ever doesn't mention him. And rarely we do, but we just fucking mention him there. So there you go, David.
You're welcome.
Just a mere mention of his name just gave him a semi.
That's it. We want our royalties in the post now for that. Thank you.
Anyway, yeah, I forgot about that because I remember across both tournaments, like the House of Torture just kept losing no matter how much bollocks they tried to put in their match. It took four of them to try and like get involved, help one team win a match, and they still kept fucking it up until Kevin Kelly just kept going about, God, these guys are just trash. Like, JY, how can you be okay with these guys representing Bullet Club?
Absolute fucking madness.
Yeah. And I think Show and Dick Togo only ever actually won one other match in the tournament. I can't remember who it was against. It might have even been Kushida and Kevin Knight. It might have been. Don't take it from me. But Bloody Evil and Yujiro did fare much better. But Ace and Chris Bay basically cemented themselves in the final by beating the champions on the final night, which was no mean feat, because I think the only other team who beat the champions might have been Titan and Bushi, which is what kept them in contention, despite losing a match for the titles going into the tournament. But it was one hell of a match, and I think you and I were even talking about it afterwards, that I kind of wish they closed the World Tag League final with Leo and Yo versus Chris Bay and Ace Austin, because it would have been a more satisfying result than the World Tag League final.
Don't even. Not. We're going to talk about it. We have to talk about the fucking elephant in the room. Fucking Bishamon. 2 years in a row. This is Gedo at his fucking finest lately. Oh, Okada's going to win the G1 2 years in a row, so no, may as well let fucking Bishamon win it 2 years, World Tag League 2 years in a row, because we're too fucking afraid to try something new or give the people, God forbid, what they fucking want with FTR vs Aussie Open 2, which was a fucking outstanding match. Why, Gedo? Why do you hate us when we show you nothing but love?
I know, it's just... Oh. Like, I remember like being so confident going into it. Like, maybe I should have been more nervous when the way that Buddy Gideon Grey once again was nearly risking losing his voice completely by just shouting from the rooftops the accomplishments of Aussie Open, how certain he was that they were going to win this tournament. Because, like, you talk about the route to get here. Aussie Open, like, finished, like, one of the most dominant teams in the entire like, World Tag League. Like, it took ages for them to finally have their first loss. I think that was over Naito and Sanada. And to the point where I legit thought it was going to be Naito and Sanada versus Aussie Open in the final, with Aussie Open winning to get their win back over the one of the only teams that beat them. But no, as I predicted in our little preview a month or so ago, they had to play spoiler with LA House of Bob Eyes beating LIG on the final night. So there was a further kick in the balls. But Aussie Open finished on like 14 points, so much like the teams in World and Super Junior Tag League, they were very dominant other than two matches. Also, the final night of block action, they fucking didn't need to wrestle a proper match because Chase and Fally had to forfeit the rest of the tournament because Chase had to go back to the US for family issues. So basically everybody was given 2 points automatically. So they basically got to sit, come out, beat up some young boys and sit back and watch the rest of the tournament on the final night.
I mean, It's a shame, like, the way it came down for that final, because I was so hoping they would have maybe taken a wee gamble and, like you know, Naito and Sanada, or, like, the Holy Seaman Army, which is Hanari and Okan, all hail. But it was very odd, like the sudden forfeit out of nowhere that Chase Owens and Bad Luck Fally had to kind of give up. But at the same time, am I really complaining that I didn't have to watch more of their matches? Nah, not really. Yeah.
I do like that Fally just stuck around just so he could beat up the Young Lions for the rest of the tour. You know, it's easy money, we can get it. Because I like to do in this section when we do tournaments to talk about the two people who end up in the finals, how their road to the final and then the match itself. But, like, honestly, out of all the teams that could have been, I think out of all the teams that could possibly face Aussie Open, because it's basically a race to Aussie Open versus, and the rest of the tournaments decide who faces Aussie Open, because it was such a lot that Aussie Open were going to the final. But legit, out of all the teams you could possibly have been to face them, I legit don't remember much of anything Bishamon did. I think Bishamon had the most unremarkable World Tag League run of any of the favourite teams to be in the final. Legit, can't remember a single fucking thing they did, other than the fact that they're both dressing like somewhat like samurai now because they've got their weird chest plate things.
That's it. There was nothing at all special about their run in any shape or form, and I can't get my head a fucking round it. But, like, Fletcher and Davis were just pulling out match after match after match, and even when you listen to accolades, like, I mean, I think it was mentioned in commentary, like, Fletcher and Davis came back, like, as a team had over 200 matches under their belt. Bishamon only had 65. Bishamon's been tag title holders in one promotion, Fletcher and Davis across 19. How the fuck does that make any sense?
I know. And I think also you add on the fact that as the open team, like, all over the world, not just Japan, like Bishamon, like, the closest to Bishamon have had really 10 international matches beating the Factory at Forbidden Door on the fucking pre-show. That's the closest they've had to an international impact, like, in terms of wins. I think it's also the same to for like Will Ospreay, why he's got so many more five-star matches, because he travels the fucking world, doesn't just do it in Japan like Okada. He goes everywhere and puts on that level of a match. And just, and then Kevin Kelly, I know this is his opinion, but like you were talking about how the PWI tag teams had just come out. I think it was Usos number one, FTR number two, and either order of those two could have been the right decision, but I was fine with Usos being number one. But like, he was like, oh, my opinion, the top three tag teams in the world are number one, Aussie Open, number two, FTR, number three, Bishamon. One. Like, they're good as a team. I mean, it's given like something for Yoshiashi to finally do prove himself, both first as a trio, now as part of a tag team. And you know what? They had a hell of a story in last year's World Tag League, and they deserved to win it, and they deserved to win the tag titles over Dangerous Takers last time. But, and I'm glad that this team basically keeps Goto on TV, because I hate it when Goto's kind of moved to the background. But, like, legit, this is like the polar opposite of last year. Like, I don't even, as good as a team they are, I don't think you should put them in the same conversation as FTR or Aussie Open.
Yeah, that's like when it comes to like, I think you've got it bang on the money there with the tag teams. Like, PWI one, it's always going to be up for debate. Usos weren't number one in the world to me because they only done it one promotion. Aussie Open ran the world, FTR ran the world. But I would definitely say like those three teams combined, that is a definite top three anywhere you put them. Imagine if whatever have got a forbidden door which allowed all three of them to fight each other.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a thought.
I think the thing with the Usos is like they say one of the criteria is like impact and like level of opponents and key of accomplishments. Like, you can't exactly argue with a team that was basically tag champs in one way or another for the entire calendar year. Like, they've been SmackDown tag champs all year, and then midway through the year they added the Raw belts and a bit undisputed tag team champions. And like,
and the DUI, you know, championships.
Less said about that the better. So I can see the point there, but yeah. And then I think it was like TMDK that they eventually beat to be sure to fight Aussie Open. And you know, I would even take an TMDK over Beast One to fight them in the final, because like, you know, TMDK had a weird out of nowhere great second leg of that tournament where they just randomly started winning. Like, they beat bloody Naito and Sanada out of nowhere. They got a sneaky roll up when Suzuki tried to choke out Shane Hayes over, like, he turned into a roll up and they beat Suzuki Gun. Like, they just suddenly came out of nowhere on that one.
That's like, there's so many teams in this World Tag League that kind of got like underappreciated, and Hayes and Nichols were like, it's like people forget how great a fucking team they were back in NXT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even NXT, I think we only saw like the bare like surface of what they could do as a team, because their highlight was like 2016. Oh, one of them jumped off that weird shark cage thing, and then can anyone really tell you what else they did other than one of them getting injured for ages after that? And then he leaves, and the other one goes on to sadly be Slapjack for a while. But, you know, we've all been through a phase.
That's it. We all have. We've all had a phase. It happens.
So, like, when it got to this match, like, it'd been a solid, like, show. I thought the World Tag League final, like, some decent undercard, like, tag matches. Most of them were building the stories that were going to be paid off at Wrestle Kingdom. And then this match happens, I thought it'll still be a solid match because it can't not be with the teams of all. They were throwing everything, but nearly bloody half an hour. And then, but then they even pulled out a table at one point as well. And I think it was, but I can't remember who went through the table, but like, you know, I'm glad the table fucking broke because, you know, those Japanese tables are very, very temperamental.
It was Fletcher. It was that fucking brutal GTR from the middle rope.
Ooh.
That gave me the fear of God when he was doing it. I was like, no, he's not going to. Oh, no, he is. Oh, no. That's death.
And it wasn't even that weird, like, tag team, like, powerbomb GTR kind of combo they used at the end. They hit that kind of a spin out, like, netbreaker powerbomb move that they've done occasionally, which I don't associate as much as a finisher as I do, like, the assisted GTR. So and they, when that move fit, I'm sitting there not even expecting anything to happen. It goes one, two, three, and I just sit there with my mouth open, like, after a few seconds, I'm like, what? Like, because I watched the full show, well, most of the show live, and then the tag league ended. Like, I had it, my computer one end, and then at the corner I had my tablet where I was watching the show, and was getting close to like the Never Title match. We'll get to that later. I took a break. I went and had my lunch, watched those two matches, and then I got to the World Tag League final, and I had to do something else, so I turned it off. I'll come back later and avoid spoilers, and thankfully I did, because I was still invested in Aussie Open. And when I watched this, but I watched this, I'm
going to say about that weird assisted GTR kind of finisher that Bishamon's got, it is the most 50-50 move in all of tag team wrestling at the moment, because when they hit it right, it does look painful, it looks fucking beautiful, but if not, it looks so fucking slow. It's like someone put it in slow motion and it looks like landing on a cloud. It looks soft as fuck.
I mean, I remember just sitting there in like absolute like confusion at the end. Just like, seriously, all the evidence pointed to an Aussie Open win, and then this happened out of nowhere. Like, the only thing I can think of is like, oh, Bishamon lost the tag titles to O'Kan and Cobb, and then the belts kept getting switched around, like Bullet Club, then Cobb and O'Carrigan, then FTR. So since then, they've not been able to challenge properly, get their belts back, which is fair enough if you want to tell that story. But you mentioned that during the tag league final match, and then maybe one other time. You're not really, but if you built their tag league around that story, then fair enough. But you didn't. So you just pulled this out of nowhere. It's like, oh no, the other team won. Oh, these guys got to be considered one of the best teams in the world, says Kevin Kelly. And I'm like, yeah, but so if Aussie Open, they're better than these two. Why the fuck didn't they win? Like, why are you doing this to me? Like, why are you giving me Bishamon VFTR when that's not what I wanted?
Exactly. I didn't ask for this. What is this all about?
Like, yeah, because like, it just seemed to came out of nowhere. Like, no, all you had them confront them before the tournament, and they go on a hell of a run. You're like legit. You can't blame us for thinking that every sign you could possibly have was pointing to Aussie Open.
That's it. Oh. It's like, what? I just cannot get my head around any of the booking decision around the final, because Aussie Open, it was built up the whole, we've waited 3 years to get here because of the pandemic and that. We weren't sure if we were ever going to get here. We were going to do this, we're going to do that. We've dominated the world waiting to get here. And then that. I was like, no. No, Gato.
You took going to take yourself for a shake. Took the strong belts off them and everything for this. Just so they could be here. Like, you put them on the machine guns, so fair enough, they also added the Impact tag titles, but, you know, they're more an Impact than they are in bloody on Strong right now. You could have just stuck the belts, kept the belts on Aussie Open, and you would have made a difference if you weren't going to have them, you know, win the tournament. Although, saying that, they are teasing a match between Machine Guns and Roppongi Vice for those Strong tag team titles.
Oh, that would be pretty decent. But could you have imagined if they got the Motor City Machine Guns in for this tournament as well?
Oh, that would have been amazing. Or even brought Alex Shelley over. I know he and Sabre are doing a lot as a Machine Gun, but if Shelley could come over just because she does the Time Splitters again, would have been awesome. I watched that backstage pro, because I think they did recently have a title defence for the Strong Belts. I think it was against the Stray Dog Army. And then Rocky Romero basically challenged him, and Alex Shelley says to him, you know, I always wanted to go drinking with you guys, so why don't we say the winners buy the drinks when we fight for these belts? And you can expect the drinks to be on us.
You'd expect. But maybe.
Maybe. Who knows? So yeah, and then Yoshihashi, the fucking tit. I can tell he was fucking up, and I don't even speak Japanese. But he called Yo and Leo Rush out, trying to get them to do some weird celebration and tribute to Inoki. They couldn't get the order of events right. And so Leo Rush and Yo just looking at him, like, with absolute confusion on their faces. And then they finally got it done. And I was just like, why am I even watching this? Like, I should have rage turned this off as soon as they won the match.
And when they started doing the joint promotion, I was just like, oh, fuck off. These are just fucking rubbing chaos in my face now. I could get it if it was LIJ or something. I love LIJ, but I can't get behind an all chaos fucking victory at the end. Boo. Yes. Boo Earns.
Yes, Boo Earns. Like, if you're doing two tournaments, you know, coincide each other. You can't have baby faces win both. You need to have at least one heel team win. And even then, Aussie Open aren't even that much of a heel team because I like Aussie Open. But Grant, as long as we're venting, the third from last match was the Never Open Weight Championship match between Hikuleo and Carl Anderson, the match we're all waiting for. And I know you, of all people, have some strong opinions about this.
I didn't even pay for this match, but I want a fucking refund. Never ever thought I'd ever hear myself say that in my life, but I want a refund for a match I didn't even pay for. That was the most phoned-in bullshit from that bald fraud, Carl Anderson.
So, just asking for a refund. The anger of this match brought out your inner Karen.
That's it. Proper, I want to speak to the fucking manager. I want to speak to the manager. It was so lazy. It was 10 minutes that felt like it went on for 10 hours with like slow rest holds and that. And Hikuleo didn't even get to look good at the end of it. What did they do to my boy? What have you done to my boy? And Carl Anderson's giving it this whole, I'm the greatest never open weight champion there ever was. No, no, Carl. It's fucking Ishii. That's the greatest open weight champion there ever was.
Well, I'd also make an argument for Shingo Takagi, but that's a conversation for another day.
But, yes, Shingo as well.
Yes, Shingo will kick your ass, you bald twit. Anyway. But yeah, it just seemed like very slowly they did some brawling on the outside, so you can imagine that was all Carl Anderson decision. You kept getting thrown around you. You could just imagine that he was going to lose here the way they were making literally, like, throw him about points. He had him throw him into Gedo at one point. And, you know, he squashed Buddy Huger on the road to this. But then I think a report came out before this about Carl Anderson being at Wrestle Kingdom. So he kind of figured he might not lose this. And then, yeah, just typical, oh, guns done. Carl Anderson wins. But like you said, they could have done more to help Hikuleo in defeat than they did here. And what's interesting is that Super J-Cast tweet, very similar to your comments, about basically how lazy Carl Anderson seemed in this. And Carl Anderson liked it.
I love that. I was like, no, fair play. It might be a big bold fraud and that, but fucking fair play for that ultimate shithousery by liking a tweet where you are getting absolutely fucking slated.
Yeah, you may be a bald fraud, but you can be a self-aware bald fraud.
Honest to God, that was just next level fucking shithousery. You know what? Fair play to the prick for it, but I was so angry at this match, and then even the post match, yeah, I'm going to come out and challenge you, Gunston. I'll see you at the dome then. It's going to be the most, it's like, why the fuck would you Gunston your challenger and be like, oh yeah, I'll see you at the dome? I'd be like, bitch, you couldn't even fucking hit me here, and I've just been through a match. You're pish. Next.
So yeah, we're getting the Tama Tonga rematch at the Tokyo Dome, which I thought, of all the people who come out and challenge it, probably would have been Tama Tonga. I think given everything that's happened, you can make an argument that Tama Tonga shouldn't have lost the bloody belt to begin with.
Exactly. Never should have.
No. But, you know, we're getting all this stuff off our chest, Grant, and we should talk about something, not in an angry, but more a sad way. Because after a win, thankfully, against the House of Bob Bags, the team of Doki, Lance Archer, Kanemaru, and Doki, that was, that got the win in an 8-man tie. Suzuki then gets on the microphone and makes a kind of out-of-nowhere announcement that at the end of 2022, Suzuki-gun would be going their separate ways. And it really shocked everyone. There was no build to this. He was going through everybody and, you know, giving them all compliments. And, you know, yeah. I thought he was either he's offering the leadership to someone else, like Zach or whatever, or I even thought, like, is Suzuki bloody retiring? Because we already got Mita having a last match. We don't need more people having last matches. You know, the Murder Grandpa stay around, he's just not going to be with his friends anymore.
That's it. As Tai Chi called it in his post-match comments during Tai Chi Taka Mania that happened yesterday at this point in recording the 19th, it will now be Lonely Gun. Tai Chi said that we'll be Lonely Gun on his own, and I was like, I'm going to fucking cry when they have their last match on the 23rd. I'm going to cry like a little bitch.
Yeah, even though it's got no factoring on the main event on the 23rd on the road to Tokyo Dome Show, the final show of the year, that is going to be the main event of Doki, Kanemaru, Taichi, and ZSJ taking on Archer, Suzuki, Desperado, and Takemichi Noku. And it's 30 minutes. You know what? Fuck it. I can't see anybody and Suzuki beating each other. Let them go 30 minutes. Let them have a draw each other. Then all shake hands and be friends, you know. As they're played out with Leave the Memories Alone.
Honestly, if they play like fucking Creed, My Sacrifice or what that's it, I will fuck it. I will cry like a bitch.
It's sad, but you know, and I worry for some of the guys without Suzuki going like, what's Doki gonna do on his own? You can't leave him on his own. He'll hit the wrong person with a pipe. He'll get himself hurt.
I'm looking at the last match, and honestly, I think it's going to be like ZSJ is going to like absolutely leather the living shit out of Taka. Or Suzuki's going to murder Doki. It's going to be one of those two.
I could see a scenario where either Zack or Taichi, you know, get the pin over Suzuki. It's kind of Suzuki's way of, you know, paying it forward to, you know, one of the guys that he's kind of had in his group for so long. You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Like you said, yes, it'll be a very sad day indeed. That's Christmas. No one should be crying this much at Christmas.
At least ZSJ could use the momentum going into his Wrestle Kingdom match. So I wouldn't be surprised if it is ZSJ to get the win just for that final bit of momentum, and then like Suzuki being like, you better win that match at Wrestle Kingdom so I can go and fight you for it.
Talking about the Tai Chi Mania thing, by the way, a fun thing that was running through the tournament was on the undercard, there was some combinations of Zagoon v LIJ for the most part, partly because of, you know, Desperado and Hiromu being in the four-way at Wrestle Kingdom. But also the challenge had been made to Shingo by Tai Chi. And so these two just kept causing the matches to end in encounters and no contests, because everyone just kept fighting outside the ring and the matches kept getting called off. Which I didn't mind, because it meant the matches didn't go very long. And, you know, as quickly as I can get to the undercard of one of these shows, the better so I can get to the actual tournament matches. But it was just so fun just seeing the escalation. Even at one point, having the match end at a count out, and Shingo gets back in the ring and immediately calls for the match to restart, and then it does. And they even put the graphic back up.
Oh, hell, is it? It looks like it was absolute fucking chaos. Like, I was like, what the fuck is going on here?
I think then they had the match at Taichi Mania in the main event. And I believe, I'm trying to remember what the bloody match was. Yeah, it was Shingo who won the voting. It was a Takagi style last man standing match with Lumberjacks, Texas Deathmatch style. Like, what the... I'm reading it off New Japan's website in an article about the match and, like, Taichi's speech. And just, there's, like, so many words, like... I think when a YouTuber tries to put so many key words out their title so that more people will see it, it's like, Takagi style, last man standing, deathmatch, Mumbajack, deathmatch.
It's like, how can we make this, like, stipulation name very, very long?
Mm-hmm. And like, because Taichi, even though he lost, gave a speech at the end, I saw a thumbnail of Taichi Mania with him speaking. I thought, fucking hell, did Taichi win? And then I realised, oh no, Shingo won. So Shingo Takagi is officially the king of pro wrestling 2022, even though I think compared to 2021 and 2020, where I think he's undoubtedly the king of pro wrestling in my eyes, he said he's not had a strong year in 2022, it's 2021 or 2020.
I feel Shingo has been fucking diddled with the hard end of the stick in 2022, and I'm hoping he bounces back in 2023, because the man fucking carried the promotion throughout most of the pandemic, and he deserves more recognition for it.
Absolutely. I know. He's not even got an actual confirmed spot for Wrestle Kingdom. Like, there's a six-man tag that involves LIJ. He's not even one of them that's in the match. And, you know, Jonah teased a match with Shingo, which I would have loved. Then he says, like, what, Paul? How much money are you paying me? I don't care if I'm with the Miz, fuck it. And then he showed up on Raw the other night.
I know, it's like, yeah, Shingo, I'm coming for you. I've got a clean win over Okada. Oh, money? Carl Anderson done the same? Fuck it, I'm in.
He's just like, the smell of money wafted to him like in a cartoon when there's a pie on the windowsill.
Just like, Oh, money, 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 money.
So Jonah's back, and Big O doesn't really have a clear path for Wrestle Kingdom. But we'll mention the Wrestle Kingdom card. We are going to do a preview at some point, more on that in a little bit. But let me run through the card. They announced, they had a press conference the day after the Tag League final, so they announced four like undercard matches, but there was quite a few that we already knew about, given the results of recent tournaments. So the full card, the pre-show matches, says opening match, but then later on says first match, so you can tell it says opening match, it's on the pre-show. We got Roy Hay, Oiwa versus Oleg, a 3-minute exhibition match, so you got the big German fella against one of the Japanese boys. I don't think, even though I think it's going to go a draw, I still think Oleg's going to batter him. Then we got the right to challenge Rambo for the KOPW 2023 Provisional Trophy. Because the Wrestle Kingdom is one night, I assume maybe they'll hold off till New Year's Dash to have the match that actually decides the KOPW 2023 Provisional Holder, or maybe they'll even hold off to the Yokohama show. Who knows? Then we also got an Antonio Inoki Memorial match of Tiger Mask, Tatsumi Fujinami and Minoru Suzuki against Nagata, Kojima and Makabe. And then the extra card we got, obviously, to be your Tag League winners, Leo Rush and Yo versus Catch Tier 2. Kari defending the title against Tam Nakano. This is the actual order that's listed on the website, at least. We got Bishamon v FTR for the World Tag Titles. The TV title tournament, 15-minute time limit. Ren Narita versus Axie Virginia. Never title, Tamashonga, Carl Anderson. And an ultimate bit of shithouse right here. It's not Great Muta's final New Japan match. It's Keiji Muto's final match. Same fucking person. Shota, Keiji Muto, and Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Bushi, Sanada, and Naito. The four-way for the junior heavyweight title, Taiji Ishimori versus Hiromu versus Bushi, Master Wato versus Desperado. Double main event of Will Ospreay defending the title against Kenny Omega, the US title that is, and the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, Kazuchika Okada versus Jay White. Oof, what a big stacked meaty card that is.
It is an incredibly stacked card beginning to end, although I do have my issues with it, but we will discuss that during the proper preview show.
But yeah, definitely.
It's going to be a good one.
Oh, yeah. I definitely have some things I was going to bring up about that I thought about for some of these matches, but I thought as well as well, save it for the preview. And so we should mention some things concerning East meets West content going forward. Two key things to note, and that starting in 2023, East meets West will primarily be on the first Tuesday of every month, so kind of in that feature show spot. Provided that there isn't any extenuating circumstances, like there's a tournament coming out, I mean, you get a show out before a good few days before the tournament, in which case it might switch to a different day. But primarily going forward with the first show of 2023, which will be a Wrestle Kingdom preview show, which helps given that the very next day on the Wednesday is Wrestle Kingdom. So 24 hours before Wrestle Kingdom, before Wrestle Kingdom, as I'm going to call it now, before Wrestle Kingdom X7, 24 hours before, you're going to have a preview show with our good selves breaking down all the matches. Maybe not the Young Lions match. Couldn't give a fuck about that one. So yeah, first Tuesday of every month starting this coming January 2023, you'll hear East meets West. Another key thing to note is you're hearing us now midweek. This is not the only time this week you're going to hear us. So I'm hoping to actually get it out maybe for Christmas Eve, because I think that'd be a great Christmas present to all of you. But it's happening. We're recording it. The Great Okan Christmas special is happening, and that will be the final beat. That'll be the final bit of East meets West and ESSR content you hear in 2022.
We are so fucking good to y'all. All hail the Great Oshaga.
What's the show going to really involve? Fuck knows. We don't even know. But we said we were going to do it. We've told Stephen we're doing it. No one's told us not to do it. So it's happening.
That's it. We decided after the success that was the Viscera special, we needed a new special this year, and we thought we'd step up to the plate.
Yeah, people have been arguing about who else to do Christmas specials about. We just said, we're going to do Great Old Khan. No one tells we couldn't do it. So it's happening.
That's it. You could have stopped this. Everyone else that doesn't listen to this could have stopped it. It's their own fault.
Yeah. This is you. This is your fault. You brought this onto the world. Oh,
and there's nothing you can do about it.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to this. And we hope you are as well. Ladies and gentlemen, you can follow East Meets West and Suplex Retreat and keep up with everything going on with the show on all good Android podcasts and sites. Find that Viscera special from a couple of years ago and find past episodes of East Meets West. Find all the past feature shows, episodes of Central, Saturday Draft Live, all in our back catalog on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Podbean, on all good Android podcasts and sites, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Suplex Retreat to keep up with what we're doing. Follow us on TikTok, we're getting some great content out on there. The page is growing very quickly, and we're really happy to see that. We hope you guys will continue to engage with us over there. And engage with us on the Suplex Retreat community page on Facebook. Join in the Listener League for our fantasy draft, get involved in the conversation. But do note, if you join the Listeners League, you will be signing up for a slagging on a weekly basis on Saturday Draft Live. Those are the rules. But Grant, been another smashing year of content for East Meets West. Great stuff for New Japan, and I look forward to rounding out the year with our upcoming Christmas special.
All hail the Great Okan Christmas special. What a way to end the year. It has been fucking class.
Wow, what a time to be alive. Goodbye, everyone.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.